Hello, and welcome to Parent Wise with Monica Irvin. I'm Monica, and good morning. I'm so glad that you're listening. I hope everyone is off to a great day. Families, thank you. Thank you for being here. I am excited again. I'm excited about our topic today. About a week or so ago, we made a post on our Facebook page asking for some suggestions on topics that you'd like us to cover, and we didn't get a huge response, but we got a couple of suggestions, and so I wanted to talk about one of those today because I appreciate so much you all taking the time to give us some feedback, and so I'm going to address one of the topics that was suggested. And of course, it's all about teenagers. So today's topic is raising teens or parenting teens while growing our relationship with them. Isn't that what we all want? I know that we do. But before we dive into our topic, I just wanted to share a few things going on with me and a few things that is happening. So first of all, yesterday, so you know I live in Knoxville, Tennessee, and we had I think it ended up being a 3.4 or 3.6 earthquake about an hour outside of Knoxville, but I felt it. I felt it a lot, and I really have never, one time years ago, I thought I felt a shudder, you know, and it ended up being an earthquake, but it just lasted a couple of seconds maybe. I wasn't even sure what I felt. But yesterday, I was in a meeting, and we were in this office building, and sure enough, the whole building started shaking. And my first thought, I live right beside a train, and sometimes, you know, the windows in my house shake because the train's going by, but you can hear the train going by. Well, I didn't hear a train, so I looked at the person whose office it was, and I said, "Is there a train nearby?" And she's like, "No." I'm like, you all, this is an earthquake, and it was just... it freaked us out because we don't have a lot of earthquakes in Tennessee. So I feel for anyone who has felt a bigger one. I definitely don't want to go through a 7 point or higher earthquake. So that freaked me out a little bit. And of course, you know what I was thinking about last night, which I'm sure a lot of people were. I was thinking, how is my food storage? Could we survive for a couple of weeks or a couple of months? And sure enough, we do not have enough water, so that was top on the list to talk to my husband when he got home. I'm like, honey, we got to get our water storage better supplied. Anyway, so that was kind of interesting. Today, I'm going to meet with a previous governor here in Tennessee, Governor Haslam, and I'm doing that on assignment from Pro-Life Tennessee. So I do a lot of work with Pro-Life. We have our big Pro-Life March this coming Sunday. And I love this work. I know it's the Lord's work, but it's some days it can be discouraging because the opposition to pro-life is strong opposition and grows stronger every day. And yesterday we were in a meeting that was pretty serious and some serious things going on. And I felt the discouragement around the room. And I just, you know, I just had to remind all of us. I'm like, you know, you all, we need to find peace in knowing that we are on the Lord's side and we're not in this battle alone. Anytime that we're fighting for what's right, we are never fighting alone. And we have no idea what's happening on the other side and how the heavens are involved in our fights on the earth for the right and for the Lord's work. And we just, I think it would encourage us to realize how many unseen are also fighting with us and for us and doing things that we don't know or understand. And so anytime that any of us are standing for truth and righteousness, you know, may we be comforted in knowing that we are not alone, and take courage that it's such an honor to be fighting in the Lord's battalion. I wanted to share with you a resource that I have that I have just fallen in love with. So I about a year ago, I met this little lady who has her own business. Excuse me, my throat's a little scratchy today, so I'm going to have to drink a little hot tea while I'm doing this podcast. But I met this lady, and her business is called MyFrugalHome.com. And I met her at a fair, and she had a lot of her products there. And she had this one product called Whipped Body Butter. So that sounds like something I would love. And so I tried it at the fair. And at first, when I put it on my skin, I didn't like the way it felt because it was pretty greasy. And then I had like kind of greasy fingers for a few minutes afterwards. And I thought, oh, I don't know. But I knew she was a new entrepreneur, and she had a lot of great products. And so just, I know what it's like to be an entrepreneur, and I know how hard it is to get started. And so I bought some stuff from her, and I went ahead and bought the body butter. But anyway, I got home, and just because I bought it, I thought, well, I'll use it. I don't like to be wasteful. And so I've always had really bad skin. I inherited, I blame my mother and my grandmother. My skin looks just like theirs. I'm really fair skinned. I got too much sun damage as a teenager, and I've just got really dry skin. And I started using it at first just on my legs because I have alligator legs. And you all, it was so funny, but after about a week or two, my husband was touching my leg, and he was like, oh my goodness, Monica, your skin feels so soft, you know, it feels so good. And, you know, I knew that if he noticed that, then it must be working. And so I just kept using it, and I started just loving it, and I just lather my whole body in it. Well, eventually, about 6 months ago, you know, I usually use pretty expensive stuff on my face, although I've always used, or not always, but the last decade, I've always tried to use natural products. But so it has essential oils in it, just a very simple ingredient that's in it. But so I went ahead and used it on my face. You all, I think it's made the biggest difference. I love it. And yeah, when you put it on, it's pretty greasy. It's like you're putting oil on your face and on your skin. But as I've done research, I've realized that even if you have oily skin, that it's wonderful for even oily skin to put oil on your skin if it's natural oil. And so I've been doing that, and I think it's just made a huge difference. I just love the way it feels. So I just wanted to tell you about that great resource. So once again, I'll put the link in the notes of the show, but it's myfrugalhome.com. And the one product that I'm using is Whip Body Butter. It comes in two different scents, like a mint and then also a lavender, and it's only $10, you all. I love when I see people that are just, you know, not trying to get rich, but they're trying to, you know, make a living or trying to supplement their income, just fair prices. And I think she's a little too cheap, but I think it's wonderful. So there you go. Finally, my husband has decided that we're going to renovate half of our house, you all. So my anxiety is already growing, even though we have not even started. So I know how this is going to go down. Y'all are going to have to, I'm going to be having my podcast from some, you know, mental institution when this is all said and done, because we're supposed to just remodel our kitchen. We've been in our home for 20, let's see, how long we've been in our home? Almost 26 years. Yeah, 26 years. So it really does need a little updating. But of course, that little kitchen update has now grown into master bedroom, master bath, upstairs bedroom. My anxiety grows just thinking about it. So we're excited about that, but I'm very anxious about that. And supposedly that's going to start up in a couple of weeks. So there's my life in a nutshell. We're getting excited. We're literally, how many days away? I don't know, but almost, I guess, 10 days away from the launch of Fundamentals for Kids. Y'all, we're just, oh, I'm so excited. I can't wait for you to see this product. I think it's going to be the number one subscription box for kids in the world. We are so excited about it. It is just, it's come together so well. We feel the Lord has blessed us, and we made a little ad 2 weeks ago with these three adorable little boys, And the ad turned out so perfect and just excited. So got a lot of fun things going on. All right, let's jump in. Let's dive into this topic. So there's so many different things we could talk about when it comes to raising teens. But as you know, usually everything that I focus on, you all, when it comes to parenting, is all about our relationships and how do we deepen our relationships. Because I know that our happiness in this life is completely wrapped up in our relationship with God and our relationship with our family. I mean, that in lies our happiness. And today it seems like there's so many broken relationships inside families. And not maybe completely broken, not like we don't have anything to do with family sometimes, but just when I think about what kind of relationship I want with my children, with my siblings, with my extended family, I want the kind of relationship that when we decide to get together or when we decide to spend time together, that everyone is so excited. That, you know, that my kids don't just call me out of obligation and visit me out of obligation, but they can't wait to come home and spend some time with me and their dad, and just that we have fun together, and that we're a trusted family member for them. There's just so many things that are important to me, and it's always been the most important thing to me. Because I've always, for some reason, felt like I've understood that in order for me to influence my children, in order for me to coach them as best I can, I have to have influence over them. And I can't have influence over them if there is not mutual love and respect and honor and kindness. And that's the best way that I can help my children in life, because life is hard. And so we're going to go over several principles. The first principle that I want you to kind of visualize is that you are your child's biggest cheerleader in the game of life. Now, what do you think about when you think of a cheerleader? Envision that. What do cheerleaders do at a ball game? Let's think about a football game. What do they do and what is their purpose? Their purpose is to be this background voice that the team and the fans hear that keeps everyone positive and looking forward. And not giving up hope. And, you know, just you want to get your motivation and strength. And you need all of that. And you need people, because sometimes in the game of life, it gets very difficult. And there's lots of challenges and lots of surprises and lots of setbacks. But it's the cheerleader that's like, come on, no, come on, get up. You got this. We got this. We're going to be there for you. We're going to stay beside you through the thick and thin, through the setbacks, through the losses. Even when we lose, we're never going to stop cheering because we believe in you and we know that you can do this. And we're here to help you and we're here to support you. And it's just, a cheerleader is someone that is a happy thought. Well, families, is that how your children envision you? Is that how your teenager thinks about you as their cheerleader? The one person that they know is always pulling for them and always cheering for them and always building them up and always ready to comfort when things get tough or when there's setbacks. But is always positive. You know, if cheerleaders, when the other team scored, if all of a sudden the cheerleaders were down on the sidelines moping or crying or their heads down and frowning and they threw their pom-poms on the ground, well, you know, that would be the opposite of what we imagine a cheerleader would be doing. And so I want you to really ask yourself, if my children were asked today, if they were asked the question, quote, do you consider your parent to be your biggest cheerleader? How would they answer that question? Would they say yes? Or would they say not really? And what do you need to do to make sure that they say yes? Well, principle number two is being critical damages relationships while counseling strengthens trust. There's a big difference in being critical and counseling. We all know what it feels like when someone is critical of us. Being critical means we condemn, we insult, we point out someone's flaws for no other purpose but to point out someone else's flaws. In parenting, sometimes as parents, we get this a little mixed up. We get being critical mixed up with parenting. You see, parents, parenting means counseling. We counsel and correct our children, but we never correct without showing the better way. We never just say, you did that wrong, without saying, you might have made a mistake. Let's talk about it and let's see what a better decision would have been. What would it have looked like to have made a different decision? How would it have changed the outcome had you made a different decision? That's correcting with a purpose. That's teaching. That's counseling. We counsel with our children. When you think of the definition of counsel, what do you think the definition of counsel means? To counsel with someone. When I think of counseling, I think of someone who gently makes suggestions to me on and helps me talk through the decisions I make. Like when I think of going to a counselor, going to a therapist, I think of someone who is really good at listening, and then someone who's really good at asking questions to help motivate some different thoughts, maybe to help bring ideas to my mind that I had not thought about before. That's what I think of when I think of counseling. And parents, that's our role with our children, especially when they're teenagers. Because as you know, and it's just in them because God has put it in them, because it's important that our children become independent thinkers. That's divine design. God created all of us to be independent thinkers because it's our right by God to think for ourselves, right? That's why we're only held accountable for our own sin, our own decisions, because we're independent of anyone else. We should be, especially the older we get. We're independent. We govern ourselves. We don't allow other people to govern over us. We make our own decisions about choosing right from wrong, about what religion we're going to be, or what political party we're going to be, or just anything, but we govern ourselves, and that's by divine design. And so your children, as they become teenagers, you're sitting there frustrated because they now don't believe everything you say, or they don't agree now with everything that you do. And maybe they are starting to question things, and you don't like that they're questioning things, and maybe they're starting to talk about things that they feel and believe that you don't like and you don't agree with. And so that upsets you and that worries you. But It's part of the plan, parents. Your kids are supposed to start formulating their own opinions because that's what an independent thinker does. And so when our kids become teenagers, that starts happening naturally. And that natural desire to start pulling away from parents becomes more evident because they need to do that, because that's what's going to lead them to having the confidence and the wisdom and an ability to leave your home. Hopefully sooner than later, because that's what we want for our kids. We want them to go on and form their own life and have a life, because we know that's what's going to lead to their happiness. And so we've got to be careful that, especially when our kids are teenagers, I mean, anytime, but when they become teenagers, they're even more sensitive to mom and dad being critical. And we really don't ever want to be critical. Just like you would never respond positively if your boss was criticizing you. If my boss came in and said, "Monica, I really don't like the way you do that. I mean, you keep doing this and it's so annoying and I wish you would stop." I mean, if my boss came in and said something like that, do you think I would be motivated to stop doing whatever it was he was criticizing me for? No, heck no, you all. It just would infuriate me that someone spoke to me that way, or that he disrespected me, or that he embarrassed me, especially if he said that in front of anyone else. And then if I lose respect for him, then I'm not as concerned with trying to please him. So it's all wrapped up in how we counsel with our children. And so I just think we really need to constantly think about, am I being critical? And the way you can measure that is, am I complaining about my child's behavior? Am I pointing out everything that he or she is doing wrong? Or am I gently trying to discuss with my child what has happened, a decision they made? Am I trying to ask enough questions that I understand their point of view and why they chose to make that decision? Am I willing to discuss a solution or help them? What's even better is when we help our teenagers come to their own realization that there was a better way to do things. That's what counseling is. You know, it'd be easy if all we had to do was just tell our kids how to think and what they should do and shouldn't do. I mean, yeah, we can do that all day long, parents. And maybe when our kids are really, really little, like preschool age, we do that a lot, right? We say, no, do this, don't do that, do this. But when they become teenagers, we can't do that. You gotta stop doing that. But you know why? Because it's not effective. What is effective is if we try to understand our children and have kind discussions with our kids and help and suggest a better way. And if we can ask enough questions where we help our children come to their own conclusion that they should have made a different decision, that's when you're going to see progress. Because all of us like to think that we make the decisions about what's best for us. That we decide when we need to make a change. Hopefully it comes from listening to the promptings of the Holy Ghost and then having the courage to follow those promptings about when we need to make a change. But parents, we can't be critical. We can't be critical of our teenagers and expect to have a close relationship with them. Another principle that helps develop our relationship with our teens while continuing to parent is to help our teens plan safe activities. And what I mean by this is, a lot of times what I see today is teenagers like to hang out with their friends, and I don't blame them. And we've got to understand and remember that that's what we wanted to do when we were teenagers. But a lot of times when there are too long of periods of time where there are unplanned activities, you know, that's when things might get a little dangerous. Meaning, we want our kids to be actively engaged in any activity, and maybe not have too much downtime. And so we start to help our kids plan activities and get used to making plans and being organized. So for instance, maybe my son's like, hey mom, me and my friend want to hang out Friday night. I'm like, okay, well let's make a plan on what you're going to do. And yeah, I guess there's a possibility that, you know, we just want to play a video game or something, although that to me is the worst idea. But it's one of those things you're like, well, let's plan something, you know. And so you start talking to your child and say, well, what, why don't, how about a bonfire? You know, you guys haven't done that in a long time, and you can have a bonfire and even play a movie outside by the bonfire. And all it took a lot of times was me making a small little suggestion, and then my son would just go for it. And so why it's so important, I think, to help our kids learn how to make plans is because it actually helps them to learn how to be responsible and how to follow through with things. So for instance, if my son planned a bonfire and watching a movie, then all of a sudden he feels in charge and responsible for the activity, which I always loved. I liked when my son was responsible for an activity because I felt like he needed responsibility. And so next thing you know, he's got to work out collecting firewood and making sure the outside chairs were clean and setting up a screen to watch the movie and deciding what movie they were going to watch. And maybe his friend would help him. And all of a sudden, you know, him and his friend would spend a couple hours getting the whole evening ready for this activity with their friends. And it always ended up being such a better experience when there was a really planned activity. And they never had any money, so they had to get creative on how to plan fun activities. But the better that, the more planned the activities, the safer it is. And your kids learn so many great skills when they learn how to plan and follow through and be responsible for other people. And so help your kids learn how to be planners and how to plan safe activities for their friends. And that's a great principle to learn. Another principle when raising and parenting teenagers is, of course, I know you know this, but to really get to know their friends. Now, parents, you can't get to know their friends unless you spend a lot of time with them. And so that's where we have to make a commitment, an inner commitment, that our home is going to be a home where the kids are most of the time. And that's what you want. And sometimes, parents, sometimes, listen, I get it. When money is tight and your children bring their friends over and they raid the refrigerator or they raid the cereal cabinet and you're thinking, I can't do this. And so then you're a little frustrated because you just went to the grocery store and now there's nothing. And so all I can tell you is look at your budget and look around and figure out how to, you know, you can put rules in place and try to have a little organization about the food that friends can eat. But I'm telling you, it's worth any sacrifice you can make to create a home where your child and their friends feel welcome and feel at home. And so, you know, get, if you've got a shelf, maybe make a shelf in your refrigerator that this shelf is for friends. And this is the only shelf for friends. And so you're going to buy super cheap Kool-Aid packs or, you know, super cheap. You're going to go to Sam's or, you know, Costco and buy whatever, packs of cheese and whatever it is. But figure out a way that your child's friends can be at your home and you are not frustrated or annoyed or have anxiety because you have planned for their friends to be in your home. And I, when these friends came over to my house, you all, it wasn't just, hey, Miss Irvin, and off to the room they went, and I never saw them again until they left. No. Ask my son's friends how many times I sat down with them and said, okay, tell me what's going on with your life. Tell me what's making you happy these days. Tell me what's stressing you out these days. I ask my son's friends so many questions because asking questions and getting to know them is how we form relationships. And I felt like these kids were my children. And what also adds to this so much is the more you know your kids' friends, all of their friends, it gives you so many more things to talk about with your kids. So I could sit down with my son and ask him, and I was knowledgeable about, what all of his friends were up to and what they were going through and different relationships with his friends and struggles that some of their friends were having at home and how we could help. And so it just creates a lot of topics of conversation when you know a lot about what's going on with your kids' friends. And it creates a bond between you and your child when your child knows that you love their friends and you have a vested interest in them and you want what's best for them and that you'll do all that you can to help them. And so get to know their friends really well and discuss with your spouse and decide. Put plans into place what you can do in your home to make sure that your kids' friends feel welcome and that they don't feel like they're a burden on your family when they come over, because that's going to make the biggest difference in how often your children are spending time in your home as teenagers. So another principle is that the more you get to know the parents of your child's friends, the better. And parents, you've got to take the initiative here. I am sure that some of my kids' friends' parents thought I was over the top or maybe a little too intrusive. I don't know. But I wanted to know if my child was going to go to someone's home. You better believe I was going to know who they were and what they were about and what their family values were. And I'm not saying I just went through a list and asked those questions, but for my son to go hang out at other people's homes, I had to know those things. And so oftentimes there were many times that I just would call up my son's friends and say, hey, this is me. I want to get to know you better. Could we get together sometime and let's talk about the kids and just whatever? Because what happened is the more I knew them, if there were times that there would be concerns, and there always is, parents, when you have teenagers, you're going to have times of concern. You just are. It's so valuable to have this community of parents who care deeply also. And it's okay if all of us parents are not 100% on the same page. We've got to be on the same page about the most important things. But everyone has different parenting styles, and that's okay. But I remember a day when we were having a situation, and I think I've shared this with you all before, but I wasn't really sure, or I didn't feel like I'd already tried to have a discussion with my son about a certain topic, and I didn't feel like the discussion was effective, and I didn't feel like I was the best person to help my son understand a principle. And what did I do? I called up his best friend's mom, and I said, hey, this is what's going on, and I feel like you would be a good person to bring this topic up, and he might listen a little bit more to you in regards to this topic. And of course, You know, she was like, absolutely, Monica, I'll be prayerful and I'll find a time to bring up this topic and I'll let you know how it goes. I mean, parents, that is invaluable. It's invaluable to be able to trust your kids' friends' parents, because there's times when we have to call on other people in our kids' lives, because there's times when, depending on the topic and depending on the situation, we, their parents, are not the most effective counselor in the moment. And we call on other people to fill in and be a counselor to our children. I can't tell you how many times I did that. And I can't tell you how grateful I am that we had so many endearing relationships to our family. And I had so many different adult resources that I could call upon when we needed some extra help or reinforcement with our kids. So the next principle that I want to talk about is that we never correct our kids in public in front of anyone, especially our teenagers. Never, ever do it. Ever. Not one time. Not, there is not an exception to this rule. Never. I mean, if someone, you know, if your child is flipping someone over their back and someone's about to break their neck, then yes, you just have to stop it. But that's the only time. But we never, ever, ever correct our teenagers' behavior in front of anyone, because it's disrespectful to them. And when we disrespect them, we lose their respect, and then we lose our ability to influence them. So parents, protect your child's feelings, regardless of what mistake they just made. Sometimes what happens is we see our child do something and we're so flabbergasted by it, or maybe we're so offended that our child just did that and we're so angry that we don't care. You know, you go into that moment where you're angry and you don't care if you embarrass your child or what you do because you're just mad. But oh, is that going to backfire on you? So never do it. Always make sure that you and your child, that any time a correction needs to take place, that it takes place in private with respect and honor towards your child, because it's the only way that it really works, parents. Finally, I'll always say this, and that is, you can't do this without praying all the time. You can't be successful in parenting your teenager without a lot of prayer. I have thousands, I guess, you know, hundreds and thousands of examples. Let me give you one example. I'll leave you with one incident. Sometimes my memory's a little foggy, but I'll try to be accurate with this incident. So one time, one of my children had a friend over, and we have a pool in our neighborhood, and so this child and his friend went down to the swimming pool, something that happened all the time. Well, at some point, while they were down there, because it's basically out our back door, I went to just check on things, and when I went down to the swimming pool, I noticed behavior that made me really unhappy, and I was a little surprised by it, and so my child saw me and stopped the behavior, and I could tell was embarrassed, but I just said, hey, just down here checking on you. Would you guys like to come in for some lunch in a minute before I leave, and that kind of thing? And so my son was really polite to me and said, no, we're good, Mom. Thank you for checking on us. And I went back to the house. But of course, I was not happy. I was not a happy mom. And so later in the day, I mean, I knew that I was going to address it. Just, I wasn't sure how yet. And that's the thing, parents, is that my kids, like my son knew that what he was doing in that moment wasn't right. Like, I knew that because I've raised him to be better than that. But and so there wasn't a rush from, you know, like I could have just gone down there and when I saw what I saw, said, "What are you doing? What do you know?" And I could have just thrown a fit and all that stuff. But I've learned in my experience that that is not effective. And so anyway, so later in the day when my husband came home, of course, I told him about what I had seen and we talked about it and decided, you know, we were going to pray about it and address it later that night. And so we did. We prayed and we asked the Lord to help us find the right words to talk with our son. And we prayed that his heart would be soft enough to understand why we were concerned. And we had a plan. And we both talked about which point or principle we were going to take. My husband was going to talk about one side of the coin, and I was going to talk about the other side of the coin. And so later that night, you know, all is calm. I'm not mad. You know, when your kids become teenagers, I'm like, it's getting mad is so unhelpful. Like, that's not going to do any good. So I can't say that I'm not saying I was never mad when my kids did anything, but usually, I mean, what the feeling is disappointment, right? But it's not just about disappointment. Usually when you see your kids do something that is not right or appropriate, it's fear that you feel because you worry. What does that mean? And we know when our kids make bad choices, it leads to consequences that are oftentimes extremely painful. And that's what we worry about, and that's what we don't want for our kids. So as a parent, when we see our kids do things, usually it's fear, and that causes us to be worried and disappointed. And so sure, you know, I saw something that made me worry and it made me fearful, and I wanted to make sure that our child knew that this type of behavior could lead to some really painful consequences. So anyway, later that night, my husband went up and asked my son if he would come downstairs and talk to us. And that was always, you know, my son knew that if ever mom and dad wanted to talk to me together, then it was not good usually. And I don't know, I guess that's sad, but that's just the way it ends up, you know, when we're going to have a discussion and mom and dad are both present, usually that means it's pretty serious. And the thing is, parents, I thought that was so effective that whenever there's a little bit, you know, more serious issue, it's so imperative that mom and dad are together if it's possible. I know it's not always possible, so we're going to do the best we can, but if it's possible, because there were other times, I'll go on a side note just for a second. There was another incident once in my child's life where there was something that needed to be discussed. I was kind of upset about something. I wanted to address this really quickly with my child, and I headed up the stairs to go talk to my child about something, and I felt like I heard a voice that said, "Monica, no, wait for Charles." And Charles is my husband. And I mean, just that thought immediately came into my head pretty strongly, and I didn't want to wait because, you know, I was ready. I wanted to go talk to him right then, and I wanted to address this, and so I dismissed it for a second and kept going forward up the stairs, and again, I just felt this overwhelming wait for Charles, and it was so hard for me to do that. But I did. I turned around and I was like, I knew the Lord was telling me to wait for my husband. And so I did. And that incident too, I was so grateful I waited because my husband said things in that discussion with my son that I would have never thought to say. And that's why it's so important, parents, that we're prayerful about addressing these issues with our teenagers because we need the Lord's guidance here. And so anyway, going back to the other situation, so my husband called my son down and he sat down on the couch, and I'm sure he knew what the topic was going to be about, but my husband started the conversation. You know, your mom tells me that today, you know, blah, blah, blah. She went down to the pool and saw this. And basically, both of us just expressed our concern. You know, we said things like, you know, we want you to remember that a warning sign for yourself when to know that you are walking on dangerous ground is if your mom or dad did walk up, you felt the need to stop what you were doing previously. You know, anytime you are willing to do something in secret or in private that you wouldn't want your mom and dad to see, that's a warning sign that you're on dangerous ground. And we went through why the ground was dangerous. And we went through, we told our son that night that we were disappointed in the choice he had made. We told him we knew how much better he was than that, and that he had such loftier values and standards than what I witnessed that day. And you know, what was interesting is my son was very humble that night, and he apologized, and he told us that he knew we were right, and that he had been in the wrong, and that he didn't feel good about it. And it, you know, ended up being a beautiful experience for all of us. And we felt like after that conversation, you know, our son had a renewed desire to make better choices. And he did. And he did. And my point in sharing that, parents, is when our kids become teenagers, you know, we do have to change the way we parent them. And the way you can measure is just, how do you want to be treated and talked to? How would you want someone to come to you if they felt like you had been in the wrong? How would you want them to approach you about it? And that's how we approach our teenagers. And so I encourage you to, encourage your spouse to listen to this podcast. It's so helpful when you and your spouse can be on the same page. Parents, I know a lot of you are not in a situation where perhaps it's possible that you can be on the same page right now with your spouse. And I want you to know something. And I believe in the promises of God. And I know that we are not alone in parenting our children. And that all you and I have control over is how we parent our child. We don't have control over how our spouse parents our children. We can try to influence them and counsel with them, but ultimately, our spouse is in control of their behavior just like we're in control of ours. And I just will tell you to do the best you can, but to be so prayerful and ask the Lord to make up for any lacking on your part or your spouse's part. And I just think, parents, we do not know the ways of God. And we have no idea, really, what He's capable of. The healing, He can heal anything and everything. He can make up for everything that is wrong. And we just have to trust in Him and trust that if we do all that we can do to follow Him and follow His lead and parent our children, our teenagers, in a way that He would want us to, then we just have to put our trust in Him and believe that God will make all things right. And the things that aren't right, He knows about. And He is mindful of. And so thank you for the suggestion to talk about parenting teenagers. And we'll do more specific things with teens in the future. So this was just kind of a general overview. But thank you, parents, for listening. I appreciate it. I would love for you to make a comment. You know, sometimes I see all of the hundreds and even thousands of people that listen. But then when I don't see a lot of comments, I'm like, I don't know. Did they like it? Did they learn from it? What can I do better? How can I be more effective in teaching? And so I will accept and appreciate and love your good, bad, ugly comments. I'm a big girl and I can take your constructive criticism. I would love to hear the feedback because it will only help me be better at teaching. So thank you for your willingness to do that. Y'all have a great day. Bye.